98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf's Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. That's American-owned and American-dreamed Brooklyn Betting.
Everything you need to know about the sports world in the last 24 hours crammed into 6 minutes. Maloney makes the choices. You support us, Aripus, at Doug and Wolf 98.7. Maloney, what you got?
So yesterday we learned that Chris Paul entered the NBA's health and safety protocols after he tested positive for the coronavirus. Here's ESPN's Rachel Nichols giving a timeline on the CP3 situation.
According to the way NBA rules sit right now, and of course they've evolved, if a player tests positive for COVID, he needs to go into quarantine until either 10 days have passed or he can produce two negative tests that were taken in a 24-hour or 48-hour span. And then even after that, he has to undergo cardiac testing, which usually takes 2 days because there is an observation period in between. Now, there is no difference to this part of the policy if a player was vaccinated or not.
After hearing what CP3 has to go through over the next week, how are you guys feeling about his availability for Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals?
I feel bad if it's a Game 6 that ends it and the Clippers win. I feel great if the Clippers lose Game 6 and we have a Game 7 in the Western Conference semis. I think he'll be ready Tuesday or Thursday. I don't think he'll be ready Sunday.
Yeah, I think it comes down literally to the Clippers and the Jazz going Game 7 right now. If you tell me that it is going to go 7 games, and I believe that it is, I think Utah wins Game 6 and ties the series up. I think Chris Paul will not miss any time. And that's just a gut feeling based on the circumstantial evidence that we have right now.
So as the Suns are dealing with the availability of Chris Paul, what is head coach Monty Williams telling his team right now?
There's a natural tendency to let your head spin a little bit, but I try not to do that, especially with our team. You know, there's a goal in front of us, and we're focused on that, and we're hoping and praying that we'll be whole again before we play Game 1. All we can do is the next right thing, and that was what we did today. We had a really good practice.
How do you think the team is feeling right now with their leader at home?
I'm so glad this didn't happen pregame. It didn't happen the night before. This has happened, again, this sweep of the Nuggets was enormous. This happened on Tuesday night is probably when they found out about it. We find out Wednesday morning. They've got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday to get their head right, Sunday to possibly play. That's enough time to try to get over it and move on. Of course, he's a good player, and you could lose the game because you don't have him. But I think they've got enough time to get over it and be able to play their best basketball.
Two things. Number one, I'm so glad this did not happen before the Lakers series. Okay, number one, because there's been a lot of water that has gone underneath that bridge from a confidence perspective for the Suns. I'm really glad that has not happened right there, and I'm also glad to see that the Utah Jazz are still alive without Mike Conley. That also is a good testament to the Phoenix Suns in regard of saying, hey, listen, even if he can't play, doesn't mean it's over.
The Diamondbacks fell to the Giants last night 13-7 as Arizona dropped its 22nd straight road game, matching the 1963 Mets and 1943 Philadelphia Athletics for the major league record. Were either of you guys born for that Philadelphia Athletics?
Wolf?
Stop it.
Here's D-backs manager Torrey Lovello after the game.
Coach has had some brief discussions, and look, this is obviously nothing that we ever expected, nothing that we're proud of, and we can't reverse anything that's happened over the past 40-plus days, and we got to find a way to win a baseball game tomorrow.
What needs to happen, guys?
I'm with Mike Hazen from yesterday. The players need to play better. I mean, this is a team. Cole Calhoun's loss hurt, but this is there's a lot of veterans out there, and it's usually Josh Rojas and Pavin Smith that are playing the best. This is solely on them. I blame Mike Hazen for believing in them. I think he was wrong to believe in this collection of people, but this collection of people is good enough that if they're mentally focused 22 times on the road, they're going to win 5 games. out of that stretch, not lose all of them.
Well, it's not going to surprise anybody. Blame the players. You better believe it. We are the Wu Fang Clan. This is our mantra. Blame the players. And that's exactly what I do. I look at this situation with Mike Hazen, and I think a lot of it as well, a lot of his hope had to do with the fact that there was a reality, a financial reality, behind a lot of the decisions he had to make last offseason. And because of that, I don't even lay this at his feet.
LeBron James criticized the NBA for the rash of injuries after the league's early start date, saying, quote, "I knew exactly what would happen," unquote. What are your thoughts on this?
I think he's right. I think it does have something to do with it. And I think that it also flies in the face of every rank and file member of the NBA Players Association, because if you would have waited, you would have missed the Christmas window and lost millions of dollars in TV money. And if they would have listened to LeBron James, hundreds of players would have lost a lot of money. And those of us as fans who had so little to do still in that pandemic celebrate the fact that basketball came back. So, LeBron, even though you're right, you're really taking the knees out of your own union, and that's not what you should be doing.
I don't think I could improve upon what Doug Leeds just said right there. I agree 100%.
So the U.S. Open gets underway this morning at Torrey Pines. Tee times were delayed this morning due to fog, but round one is expected to get going at 8:15, so about 4 minutes from now.
Okay.
Who will be leading after today's first round?
I'm going to go Brooks Koepka. Honestly,
right in the face of Bryson DeChambeau.
And that's exactly
I honestly believe that.
I think Brooks Koepka responds to that kind of animus. I think it creates an edge in him. And I think that edge he uses in a positive way as opposed to a negative way. And not everyone's built that way.
Since I have absolutely no idea, I'm going to go total fanboy. Phil.
I mean,
your answer for Brooks sounds so much more logical. But you know what? Let's just go with Phil. Do I think he's going to win? Absolutely
Brooks
not.
Brooks likes an edge.
He does. Plays well with it. You know what would be really boring is if it's Patrick Reed. I like rooting for the edge of Brooksy. I don't like rooting for the edge. I don't like Patrick Reed. I'm not a Patrick Reed fan at all.
I don't think anybody is.
I think you're right. We know his parents aren't. Coming up next, the one, the head coach, the GM on CP3. It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The number one story of the day.
Russ is unfortunate, you know, that it happened, that you know, he had to enter protocol.
His voice and his energy was just very sad.
Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kettlelifter.
He's like, "Maddie, all I do is go to games, practice, and come home. I just don't really know what's going on." So he said he has to continue to get tested till he's clear.
Saturday, we'll know more about where he is in protocol.
Doug and Wolf's The One.
The One is, as of Thursday morning, wait till Saturday. But I'm feeling pretty good.
Saturday we'll know more about where he is in the protocol. So I just felt that that'd be a good kind of date for us to revisit and see where we are. If we play on Sunday, that'll be the day before the game. If we play on Tuesday, that still gives a couple days to prep and prepare for our next opponent.
That's James Jones in his exclusive interview with Burns and Gambo yesterday. And if you were listening to the Rush Hour reboot, you heard Rachel Nichols. If you weren't, Maloney played a quote from Rachel Nichols on ESPN's NBA show The Jump, in which she described it as, if you test positive, you've got to go through two steps. Two negative tests with a 24. She said 24 or 48 hours. She kind of got that one a little wrong. People say 48 hours because they're thinking it's 2 days.
2 days, yes.
But it's really, officially, you have to have 24 hours in between consecutive negative tests. So take one at noon today, take one at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, boom, you're good.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's 24 hours.
Then you have to go through cardio testing. And that is a two-day test with observation. So when I heard James Jones say that to Burns and Gambo yesterday, we'll know more Saturday. And when I hear Rachel Nichols say this is the process, it sounds basically like about a 3 to 4 day process.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at it from a prism of Tuesday's test, which was positive, not reporting, speculating, Wednesday's announcement through the media in Sham Sharania that we know what happened on Wednesday. We hear the quotes from James Jones and Monty yesterday. I almost said Monty Python. On the quotes from Monty Williams and James Jones on Wednesday. What's 4 days later? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So when they say, well, no more Saturday, that makes me feel like they're feeling positive. They're going to get the two negative tests, then the positive result of the cardio exam, and he's ready to go.
Did you say Monty Python? Did you?
I almost did.
Bring out your dad! Bring out your... Okay, that's enough of that right
But it's
there.
Not funny.
I'm not dead!
But it's not a funny movie.
Oh,
let's
yes,
be clear.
Just stop it. You will be in a couple of... Just stop it, you big baby. Okay, what are we talking about right now?
His name is CP3
We're
and his availability.
We're talking about Chris Paul and the availability of Chris Paul coming up. I think you're right, Douglas. I think the Suns are optimistic. I just wish there was some type of confirmation on whether or not he was symptomatic.
I would like that, too.
You know, just something right there. And here's the bad part about doing this. The speculation. Anybody that has listened to this show, you know, over the years, I despise the speculation of it all. Yet that is really the currency of the realm here when you're talking about our jobs and going on and broadcasting. People want to hear about your speculation. And the speculation that is surrounding Chris Paul right now, if only we could get confirmation as to whether or not he was symptomatic, because I think that would change our timetable a little bit. And Matt Barnes, earlier this morning, you played the cut once again where he said, you know what, hey, I talked to Chris Paul and his energy was down. And then he said he was sad. He followed that up quickly with he was sad. And I think maybe it was because he thought he was divulging some information that would mean that Chris Paul might actually be symptomatic.
Matt Barnes was a teammate of Chris Paul's with the Clippers, so that's a strong relationship there. He was on NBA The Jump and talked about his conversation with Chris Paul. Rachel Nichols, the host of the show, then followed up with the, since you talked to him.
When you talked to him this morning, is there anything else he shared? Do you feel comfortable talking about?
No, it was just his energy was down. He was sad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's so, like, this is the hottest team in the game. He's playing arguably the best playoff basketball of his career. He's leading this young Phoenix Suns team, and just his voice and his energy was just very sad. So I just really felt for him this morning.
Yeah, there you go, right there. That I feel better. The more and more you keep playing that, I feel better. Like, no, he wasn't trying to cover up with the sad thing.
Truthfully, when you say his energy was down, that could be a COVID symptom. Uh-oh, he's not ready.
It's called fatigue.
Or it could be because he's an energetic guy and he's just down.
Right.
Because he doesn't want to miss. I'm totally in the latter category.
Yeah, okay.
That his energy is down because his sadness, his frustration. And this is a guy that has dealt with everything you could possibly deal with, it feels like, in a playoff.
Right.
This guy, every year he's in the play, he gets his team to the playoffs and then he gets hurt.
Yes.
Something happens to Chris Paul and he's got to feel like it happened again right now. But James Jones was saying, hey, whether or not he's there, we got to move on.
As far as this team, this team is in a good spot. I think Monty said it earlier. You know, we're going to focus and worry about those decisions we have to make when they get closer. But with Devin, you know, with Jay and Mikal, you know, campaign with those guys playing well, I feel good that whoever we play and whenever we play, you'll see your Suns play our brand of basketball, be competitive, and put ourselves in a position to win games.
I don't know about you, but that's how I felt watching last night's game. When I was watching Clippers Jazz, I felt like, hey, it actually made me feel a little better. I'll get into that in about 10 minutes. I don't want to get into it too heavily.
But you're just talking
yet,
about the fact that here you had Paul George taking over a game, mm-hmm, because there was no Kawhi Leonard, and you had the Utah Jazz playing without Mike Conley. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Those two things right there.
I'll say that again at 8:30.
Yeah, of course. But I was glad, Basinonians, that this did not happen before the Lakers series. Honestly, right now, I think the confidence that this team has gained, I think it's not a done deal if, in fact, Chris Paul can't play the first couple of games. I'm not willing to say that. I am not willing to say that. Based on Devin Booker, based on watching Paul George take over the way that he did last night without a Kawhi Leonard out there, thinking of Mike Conley and the Utah Jazz still alive against the Clippers, and I think they're going to win ultimately. I do. I think they're going to win the last two games. I think somehow, some way, they win Game 6 in L.A., and then going back to Utah, I think they win that, Game 7. We'll see, but just the fact the Utah Jazz are still alive without their point guard and Mike Conley. Devin Booker, you made this point earlier this morning. It's time for D-Book. Hey, just because Chris Paul may not be ready to go, hey, you know what? Honestly, D-Book, take over.
It's just a game. I think it's just a game or two. This was a really interesting thing from the Director of Public Health and Prevention and Health Promotion at the University of Arizona College of Medicine in Phoenix. There was a doctor on Burns and Gambo yesterday, and I hope I say his name right, but Dr. Shad Marvasti was on, and I love the question they asked. You're a Suns fan and a doctor, so how do you feel about the CP3 news?
My first reaction was, I hope he's fully vaccinated, because if he's fully vaccinated, it's likely not to be a big deal, and if he's not, then it may still be a mild deal because, again, most folks who are athletes usually do okay because he's pretty healthy. But, you know, I'm hoping for the best. You know, that's obviously, I'm going to try to see it that way. And I think in all likelihood, you know, according to the sources you guys have, he has been vaccinated back in February. So I'm pretty positive about what's going to happen.
Okay, Dr. Marvasti, what about the golden goose that we're all praying for? Is it possible it could be a false positive?
It's still pretty likely. I would say it varies highly, so you can't really make a guess. It depends on the nature of the person getting infected. If it was just mild, if they've been vaccinated, it's definitely more likely because you've got those antibodies that are going to basically quench it, and you won't even get any symptoms. You just may have a positive test, it'll go away. So it's definitely possible, but I think, you know, we'll learn more with the update that they're planning to give us on Saturday.
See, I kind of look at it right now. We would know if it was a false positive by now, wouldn't we? We would know that. I mean, okay, we tested him again because they're testing him on a daily basis.
If they tested it Tuesday and it was positive, and then they tested him Wednesday, they didn't want to say it yet whether it came out negative, but they seemed very positive that it was either false positive or that we're going to be okay. So it would have been negative yesterday, and it's not yet negative today. If we get negative, negative, then I'm positive we're okay.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, just stop it.
Are you negative or positive about this?
I'm positive about this.
I am positive about this being negative. Yeah, I am too. But I don't have any sources on it at all, so I'm just totally speculating and being a fan.
Save yourself.
Coming up next, Clippers Jazz. Are you positive or negative about what you saw? And has your opinion changed on what you want to see next? We're positive it's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of the Suns run to the championship. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station and the Arizona Sports app. Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kilt Lifter. Doug and Wolf talk Suns in the Western Conference Finals now.
Man. Just hearing Big Voice say that. If the Suns go 8-6 the rest of the way, they're the world champions.
Whoa.
It's just, when you make it sound like it was not that hard, just go 8-6.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. We're in the Western Conference Finals. We don't know who we play, and we don't know who is playing for the Phoenix Suns to get there. And the teams that you're looking at are Clippers and Jazz, and never has it been more important that you swept the Nuggets and you're hoping for the longest possible series. If you want Chris Paul back as soon as possible, a Tuesday game would be nice. And the only way you get a Tuesday game is if the Jazz win in Los Angeles in Game 6. That game is tomorrow night. And it really brings up a difficult question of now, Who do you want to see? Do you want game one in Utah on Tuesday or game one at home against the Clippers when they don't have Kawhi Leonard? But the Jazz seem to have a Donovan Mitchell who's a little gimpy. And it was he does not look right, and we don't know about the status of Mike Conley. Mike Conley supposedly is getting closer. And I think a lot of people think he's playing in a game seven. But is he playing because he's ready, or is he playing because it's game seven?
Right, exactly. And what kind of hangover might there be for Mike Conley right there? Listen, if you're a Suns fan watching last night's game with the Clippers and the Jazz, you wanted the Clippers to win last night, right? I think that goes without saying, right?
I did.
You want this series to go seven games above all else. And the Clippers, of course, without Kawhi Leonard, they're not a better team than the Jazz, in my opinion. And that's why last night, the one-time scenario, one game, you wanted them to rise up, the Clippers. Rise up in somehow, some way, up there in Utah, beat the Jazz. And now suddenly they go up in the series 3-2. I'm hoping the Jazz obviously are going to go to L.A. and they're going to go, okay, now you want to play for keeps, I guess. So, and maybe they'll up their intensity level and tie this thing up. And then there's going to be a game seven. And at that point in time, I honestly don't care who wins.
Donovan Mitchell, what'd you think about game five?
Sucks.
Oh, okay.
I ain't got nothing else to say. Like, you know, it's tough when you're trying different things that you normally do and you see spots you can get to, but you can't. So you got to find a way to make it happen. It's tough, but I got to find a way. Otherwise, I'm going to be home. And, you know, I said it last year that we didn't do all this. And I said during the year, we didn't do all this to lose in the second round. So got to figure it out. Otherwise, that's it. Excuse my language.
Oh. I don't know if you really wanted an excuse.
No.
The thing about this game last night, if you watch the first half, this stat will make you say that's you're lying. I mean, if you watched only the first half, you will call me a liar when you hear this stat. And that is the Jazz shot 37% from three.
Yeah.
The Jazz were on a historic pace in the first half. And even though you knew there's no way to keep that up, the way they crashed in the second half was scary. And it has mostly to do with Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell took about four shots in the first half, and the team could not miss. Bogdanovich and Ingles were unbelievable, and Clarkson were crazy from three in the first half. And then Donovan Mitchell came in the second half and started chucking up a bunch of shots when he's not totally healthy. And I get it. You want to be involved. But everybody else were the ones that were hitting. And then after that, Bogdanovich stopped being quite as hot. And Clarkson really fell off. And then Ingles fell off. And suddenly it was the Paul George show. Now, Paul George was great for the whole game. But that second half, Utah pulled a Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do a lot of ball movement, force you to move side to side and create open looks in the first half. And then let's get fat and happy on the farm in the second half and lack the ball movement and put up bad shots. Utah took a page from Milwaukee, and the Clippers took advantage.
That's exactly right. I thought the Jazz looked comfortable.
For a better way of saying it.
They looked comfortable right there. And the Clippers were so hype, Basinonians. They were. This was like a wounded animal. Have you ever seen a wounded animal? You don't want to, Basinonians. Teams that appear to be in trouble may also be in a position for great opportunity. They may be. I think it's the reason why the Utah Jazz, all is well for the Utah Jazz, playing at home. All is well. And I think they looked at the Clippers and the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, and I don't care what you say, their intensity level couldn't have been maximized.
They were very lazy on defense in that first quarter.
Very, exactly right. You're talking about the best defensive team in the regular season, the Utah Jazz.
It amazes me, too, that it happened. And I know what you said. I listened. I get the human nature. But how you're not watching these playoffs and understanding things change every 4 minutes in this year's playoffs, you've got to take advantage of every situation you have. They clearly did not. But I still like the Jazz winning Game 6 and Game 7 if I'm making a prediction.
Yeah.
And the reason why is you've got their attention. They officially know they don't need Kawhi Leonard to beat you. And now that the Jazz know that, I still think they're a better team when the Clippers don't have Kawhi Leonard.
I totally agree with that right there. Again, so much of this is about your mindset. So much of this is about your confidence level. And I think right now the Clippers went out there last night and they said, we're going to lay this on the line because we know we have to. We have great opportunity to take advantage of the fact the Utah Jazz are going to look at us like our little brother. We're just going to they're going to pat us on the head. And I think that gave them the opportunity to surprise, and they took advantage of that, the Clippers last night. I don't think there was ever a point where the Utah Jazz truly believed they were going to lose that game until suddenly they were in the end game scenario and they were losing that game. And because of that, the Clippers had that opportunity to surprise them, I think. And now I think they got their attention. And I think they win game six. And if you actually are going to go back to Utah, go back to Salt Lake for a game seven, now I think they have the advantage again.
You know, a scenario you could easily see playing out. Jazz win game six, Jazz win game seven. Chris Paul is out for games one and two. And the Jazz win game one pretty handily on Tuesday night. And just like they did with the Clippers, they get a little fat and happy. Maybe play a Mike Leach quote. And game two might be the epic performance of Devin Booker. And they come back to Phoenix and that crowd with a split, and Chris Paul makes his debut in game three. I really could see that scenario playing out.
The Suns are so
And I would
much,
feel great about it if it does happen.
The Suns are so much better than what we expected them to be in this postseason, right? They are. They're growing. See, that's what makes the Suns dangerous. I don't see them as a finished product. I don't. I see the Utah Jazz as a finished product. They are the Utah Jazz. They were the number one seed overall in the NBA. I see the Phoenix Suns still growing, still getting better, and it's because of how many young players they have.
Coming up next, Derek Hall, president, CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks. They could make the worst history possible, it feels like, coming up at 12:45. What can be done to stop it? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Madam Speaker! The president!
The president.
The president.
The president.
He's the president and CEO of your Arizona Diamondbacks.
Hail to the chief.
Derek Hall.
The president.
On Now with Doug and Wolf. Presented by Cox Business. Cox Business Internet keeps you connected with 99.9% reliability. Visit coxbusiness.com for details.
Right now, Derek Hall is on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line, and I have a very... I'm interested in your answer to this question. Good morning, Mr. President. How are you?
Doug, I feel like my luck is going to change because Erin Maloney said hi this morning on the phone, and she's been, you know, such a bigwig, she doesn't even say hi anymore. So that was good. That's like the first time this season that she said hello, and I think that's going to change our luck.
Okay, good. Okay. So we know to blame 22 road games on Minch. So we know that.
I think it's probably Mitch.
Good,
I do.
Good,
Derek.
Good.
Let's start with a positive. Is there any positive right now? And I know this is bad because you've lost 22 road games in a row. I know that you're struggling right now, but is there a positive that we can start off with?
Yeah, there is a positive, and this is the last game on the road trip today. it's been tough, obviously. In you know, nearly 30 years of baseball, it's the worst I've ever seen. The positive is that we're so close to it, you know, and we know that it's going to turn, and we know that we're going to start playing better baseball. The positive is that we're starting to see some of our starting pitchers get back into the rotation, like Zach Gallen today. And part of the problem, you know, over the last few months is we've had to rush guys up here to pitch to fill in for some of these injuries. And when you're only getting two or three innings out of your starters and you're going to the bullpen with inexperienced guys and you're throwing them into the fire against really good competition, that's tough. So the positive for me, Wolf, right now is that we are starting to get some of those guys healthy back here in the rotation, just like we already did with all of our position players. And our position players are playing pretty darn good. You know, when you're scoring – seven runs and you know, night after night. Now you just got to keep the other team from scoring more than you. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to be able to do that more with our guys coming back.
This question, I think, is on every Diamondbacks fan, but it's so insensitive and crass, no one asks it. And I'll ask it because I know it's on their mind. Are you confident that Mike Hazen is able to steer these waters right now as we head into the trade deadline?
Yes, absolutely I am. And, you know, it's going to be a challenge for him because he's not physically here. But he'll still be very much involved in the way we're trying to set it up here. And remember, we encouraged him from day one of that diagnosis to be home with his family, and that's what's most important. We'll get through this. There's a lot of moves we have to make, a lot of moves we have to consider, and we also have drafts coming up, international, you know, signings. We have the amateur draft, so there's a lot that we have to be focused on. And with that, you know, we're putting a lot on Amiel's plate, a lot on Fitz's plate, and that's why we you know, all decided as a group to go out and find help like we did with Allard Baird, but we're going to be able to navigate through this for sure. And I think that these guys see the glaring problems. They see now that this group needs a change, that we need to bring in, you know, a winning combination or collaboration of such. And Allard's going to bring a fresh set of eyes and a clear objective look at who our prospects are. And we seem to be a little bit biased about our players and about our coaches and, I mean, everything, right? So he'll be able to come in and take a good look and give us his advice as we're starting to talk to other teams and reshape things. But I think there's a huge opportunity in front of us. I also believe that in this sport, as we've seen, Doug, so many times, you could be in last place one year, especially our team for whatever reason. And within the next year or 2 years, we're battling for the division. And I think that's the way it's going to be again because we have so much talent now finally in the farm system. Granted, a lot of it's at the lower levels, but we're starting to see that, you know, that come to fruition, and that's a beautiful thing. And when you realize who needs to be here, who should be here, and then you balance that out with other moves you make with other teams and or free agents, that's going to be the winning combination.
You know, Derek, obviously when you have a PhD in losing, you see a lot of coaches that come and go, and a lot of times it's in the middle of the season right here. And the one common denominator that I have seen with all these coaches is the fact they lost the locker room. They lost the locker room. They guys would not listen to the head coach anymore. Do you see any of that with Torey Lovullo in the clubhouse?
I don't think so, Wolf, but I got to admit, it's a strange year, and last year was too because of the protocol. So we're not, you know, myself in particular, not that I'm assessing all the time and evaluating. It's not my job. It's our baseball staff's job. But there's a difference when you're not on the field during batting practice or in the clubhouse after a game or before the game. You're not in the manager's office. You know, I just – personally, I haven't been able to do it, and a lot of others haven't either because of the protocol. So it's hard to assess. But I can tell you, you know, there clear indications are that nothing has changed with the relationship or the motivation from our manager to those players. They absolutely love him. They adore him. And they feel as bad as anyone with the results that we've had. And if you watch our games in particular on the road and you see after a game, for example, that 7-0 game with a devastating loss afterwards. And by the way, teams trailing by 7 runs this year were 0-192 prior to that game. Now they're 1-192. But you see our players sitting there in the dugout afterwards in shock and in disappointment. I mean, these guys are beating themselves up because they want to win for the manager and they want to win for our fans. So I don't think so, Wolf. And I really, that's not something that I've worried about during this stretch.
Talking to Derek Hall, President, CEO, Arizona Diamondbacks. It's interesting you said that because I didn't feel like that in the 7-0 comeback by the Giants, but yesterday was the first time I felt like the veterans are accepting losing, that it's just, it's part of the culture now. Where are you on that?
No, yeah, that's terrifying, right? We can't have that happen. It's interesting, Doug, that you say the veterans, because the veterans right now, as long as they're here, and by the way, they dictate how long they're going to be here, right? But they really need to change that, because we can't create a negative culture for the young players that are here now. They're young, they're impressionable. They need to learn what it's like to win at this level. And, you know, it's up to those veterans to show them the way. So I hope that's not the case. It certainly is the case, obviously, right? With 2 months of this kind of a losing streak, But it has to stop. They have to get a taste of winning. They have to see what it's like to win. And it's really up to the veterans to lead them there. And we have to make sure that doesn't happen. And we're constantly having those conversations with the manager and with the coaches. And it's up to those players to make sure that that culture does not take over that clubhouse and that it's just the opposite. Again, I know we're going to start winning some games. You know, let's start playing 500 or above 500 ball from this point forward. That's going to teach these kids, and they're going to get a taste of what it's like to win at this level, because that's most important right now, is they gain the experience.
On that note right there, D, there were some head coaches that were better with veterans, and there were some head coaches that were better with younger guys. Which one do you think Torrey is? Do you think he's good with young guys?
Yeah, I actually think he's great with young players, Wolf. He's really good with veterans as well. But I think he's great with young players. That's always been his forte. He came up through player development. You know, he was a minor league manager. When he was a bench coach in Boston, he got along so well with the young players. It's something that was talked about during his interview process, and when Mike and Amiel and others who knew him before coming here were explaining to me who the man is. That's one of his talents, is the way he can connect with young players and lead them. So I think that's a really good position to be in as we start to see some of this youth come up.
Derek Hall, President, CEO, Arizona Diamondbacks. If you, I know you don't like to think this way, but if you lose today, you set the record for the most consecutive losses in the history of Major League Baseball for a road team. Is today just one of 162 games, or do you feel pressure? Do you expect a little more?
Yeah, good question. I always do, personally. I don't want that record, but I'll tell you what, the way we've played the last few months, we deserve it. It is just another game. I think we need to take care of business. We need to correct things, turn it around, and get our guys back in the rotation. So, it's tough, right? We're going up against one of the best pitchers in baseball today, but they're also going up against one of the best pitchers as well. And again, if we're going to change our mindset, it stops today. You know, let's start winning now, come back here after a win on the road. And, you know, we're going to have huge crowds this weekend. We're in the 20,000s already for these games against the Dodgers this weekend. And if you don't think there's going to be a lot of Dodger fans in this ballpark, you're mistaken. So I hope our fans come out here and do their part as well, which I'm sure they will. And then Sunday is Father's Day. But come back here on a winning note. Don't own that record solely. And then let's start playing better baseball and winning for the young guys.
How about Mad Bum? Can you give us an update on Madison?
Progressing. I certainly hope he's back very soon too, and all indications are that he will be, Wolf. So, you know, again, he's important, right? When he was pitching so well, and that's the last time we won, by the way, on the road, and you guys know that, but when he was pitching well, the whole machine was working well, and it really starts and stops with starting pitching. You have to have that stopper. And I know we had a little bit of a hiccup last night with Merrill, but I certainly can't blame him. He's been so good. He's had, you know, quality start after quality start. He's under the microscope again because you've lost 21 in a row prior to his start. But he's been the only guy in there really who can take the ball every fifth day that you have confidence in. You can't continue to perform like that. You have to have the guys that were originally in your starting rotation back out there, and they can stop these streaks. Unfortunately, we've been handing the ball over to young guys that have single-A, double-A experience and saying, hey, go out there and win a game against the Giants. Go out there, win a game against the Cardinals. Go out there, win a game against, you know, the Rockies in Colorado. Those are very tough things to ask of a young staff. So now to get those veterans back, like you asking about Bumgarner, that's what we need. Those are the guys who can stop a streak. Those are the guys who can start this contagious streak of winning.
Thank you, Derek. Have a good Hawaiian shirt day.
Hang in there, dude.
Yeah, that's Sunday. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. There's Derek Hall, President, CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. If you're in the market for a new or pre-owned Cadillac, you want CoulterCadillacTempe.com. Experience the difference. I do like the Hawaiian shirts, I admit. Coming up next, the King has released his latest speech.
Can't stand him.
On 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Diamondbacks President and CEO Derek Hall on the Doug and Wolf Show. Presented by Cox Business. Cox Business Internet keeps you connected with 99.9% reliability. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.